This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On this week's episode, we'll be joined by Rob Burke, who is, of course, the new CEO here at the USEA, who will be reviewing this year's annual meeting. And in our series on the USEF Under 25 Winter Training List, we're going to be talking to Savannah Fulton. And finally, Debbie Adams will be back with the next installment in our series on starting the young event horse as she begins them over fences. Well, first of all, I'd like to welcome our brand new CEO, who has inherited the post from Joe Whitehouse at this year's annual meeting. Rob, you've been on the show before, but congratulations officially on becoming the CEO.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Well, we're looking forward to a new future with you, and I know you're going to be looking in the rearview mirror for a little while at the footprint that Joe left on the association, of course. And it all came to a very stirring and emotional climax, I would say, at this year's annual meeting, didn't it? All the business was done, but then there was the celebrating all the inductees to this year's Hall of Fame as well, including Joe.
Absolutely. Yeah, there were lots of tears shed. I can't claim that a couple of tears weren't shed by myself, but at the same time, it was a really exciting time, and for myself, I can't put into words, obviously, how ecstatic I am about the opportunity to get to work for the association in the sport I love.
Well, it is a time of change as well, and there are some proposals on the table to be discussed at this year's annual meeting. Rob, do you want to wrap up those, give us a review for those that weren't in Washington this past week for the conference?
Sure, yeah. Some real big high points that came forward to me as I reflect over the past week. The summit is something that we had been building up for and been trying to get input from the membership, and both before the event and people sending us their thoughts, as well as during the actual convention. And I think that the summit just went amazingly well. I feel that our members felt that they had a voice, were able to express that voice. And for those that weren't there, what we did is we essentially challenged ourselves and the members to both point out the kind of key areas, issues that the association has moving forward, and provide us with some key recommendations on what to do to solve those issues. Sometimes that's not incredibly easy, but I think out of the summit we came up with some really clear issues and some wonderful ideas on how to move forward. So what we will be doing from here on is compiling all that information, both what we received beforehand and at the convention, compiling that into a summary docket and document that we will make available to everyone online. And then also over time, we're going to, in a kind of a spreadsheet bullet point form, take those issues, the recommendations, and track what the board and what the association does to address those concerns over time. And hopefully we can check some of those off the list. So the summit was a massive undertaking that we completed. As you said, there were changes. Well, one change that passed through the eventing committee of the USEF at the meeting and had been put forward by the Board of Governors was the new proposed modified division. So that is moving forward. And that was really the only large rule change that I think I took away from the meeting. There are some other smaller items, but that really was the big one, which will now essentially would create a division in between training and prelim, not a mandatory division to transfer from training into prelim, but a point where people can aim for in between those two, because we all know that the jump off from training to prelim is one of the largest there is in the sport. There were lots of other things talked about throughout the convention. We had, other than the Hall of Fame, we had the annual awards luncheon, which was wonderful, bringing all of the folks who've accomplished so much over the past year together. We introduced 6 new members to our board of governors. We had some amazing talks. We have a new volunteer committee that will work to come up with better ways to both incentivize as well as honor and bring in new volunteers into the sport. You know, David O'Connor did a fabulous job of laying out the future plans of our international competitive program, and that even includes kind of getting our under 25 riders more experienced at the international level overseas. And then, you know, one of the big takeaways that I have, and this circles all the way back to Joe, is that we now have a new foundation. It was formerly called the Endowment Trust for essentially the membership. The public can donate to the foundation, and those donations can go towards the important projects that both support the future of the sport and help to care for the health and well-being of both our horses and our riders moving forward. And I'm happy to say that Joe Whitehouse will be staying on with us as our development officer, and in that role she will help to spearhead a lot of amazing fundraising efforts moving forward. So, boy, I could keep talking all day, Joe, but I don't think we have enough time to cover everything.
Well, I'm just wondering about the new board of directors. I'm sure our members will be wondering who those new members are, Rob.
Sure. So we did have a number of new members come on, and sadly, we had to say goodbye to a couple. But, you know, I think kind of that's the nature of a good board, is that you have a transition of leadership. And in doing so, we had a few new members come on. We had Denise Daly Thomas is now going to be our Area 4 representative on the Board of Governors. We had Eric Markell take the Area 6 position. We had Mary Cauldron came on as one of our at-large members. We have Carol Kozlowski comes in as one of our at-large members, and actually she's also going to be our president-elect. So at the convention next year in Florida, Carol will take over the helm as our president. We had Don Robbins come on as another one of our at-large members. And let's see, I know I'm leaving someone out. I think Jonathan Elliott is the only other one I left out, coming on as an at-large member. So those 6 folks come on board, and we also have a couple of new members on our executive committee, and the executive committee is made up of several of our board members, and those executives are who meet on a regular basis just to go over you know, important topics that need a decision before we can get the entire 21-member board together. So on the executive committee, obviously Diane Pitts will remain as the president. Morley Thompson will continue as our treasurer and the VP of admin and finance. Tink Eichel will take over as the secretary of the association from Kathy Jones Forsberg, who's you know, sadly, moving on. Sarah Broussard will continue as VP of Safety. Leslie Law will continue as the Vice President of Active Athletes. Peter Gray will take over as the VP of Competitions. Deborah Dialquaz will take over from Lou Leslie, who also has now moved on from the board. Deb is the VP of Area Affairs. Mark Hart will continue as our VP of Membership and Program Development. And finally, Phyllis Dawson will continue as our VP of Education. So there we go.
Well, congratulations to all those. And of course, a big thank you to all of those who have served on those committees and shown their loyalty to the association, Rob, over time.
Yeah. These are, you know, these are all volunteers, and sometimes that's lost. And, you know, one of our board members pointed out that, you know, oftentimes they'll talk about coming to the convention, and people will say to them, oh, well, your way is paid and your, you know, your registration is paid. Well, they actually aren't. All of our board members pay their own way. They are just like every other member. They have to, you know, pay to be there. And so not only are they volunteering their money, they're volunteering their time. And, you know, volunteerism was really one of the central discussion points throughout this convention. So, you know, I think we need to do as much as we can to show our thanks to all the volunteers in the sport, whether they be the folks who serve on these boards and committees, which tends to be a thankless job, to the folks who are out there on our cross-country courses and, you know, helping run all of the shows that make this sport so great.
Well, lots of business, obviously, you know, and a turning point for the association at this year's annual meeting, Rob. And as you said, the inductees were all celebrating, and an emotional evening in conclusion to the events there at the weekend. And, of course, if anyone wants to listen to those inductees being inducted in our own version of that here on the podcast, we did run the full series, Rob, here. And again, some of the volunteers, some of the people that have known these inductees so well over time spoke so eloquently on the podcast, as I'm sure they did in during that evening's celebration, too.
Yeah, I felt like I was cheating a little bit because since I'd, you know, listened to all the podcasts ahead of time of the Hall of Fame inductees, it was, you know, I could hear all the points that were made during their induction speeches made before they even came up to the podium. So that was good. And yeah, like you said, I encourage everybody to listen to those because, you know, it's, I have to say, one of the biggest honors and privileges I have is to walk into this office every day and walk past our hall wherein the photos of our previous inductees are hung. And, you know, I'm excited in the next few weeks when we get to finally hang up these new inductees on that wall.
Wonderful. Well, again, congratulations to all the award winners as well, Rob, that were celebrated too. Let's not forget those because, again, enormous contributions to the sport and all marking their year of 2015 as we look forward to an Olympic year, Rob. So lots happening all around the sport next year.
Yeah, really. Next year. Well, tomorrow and next year. It's an exciting time. So, you know, I think for my first year as CEO to be during an Olympic year is pretty exciting as well. So I will be rooting for Team USA just as loud as anyone else.
I'm sure. Lots to look forward to. Well, the very best of luck, Rob, in your new role. And, of course, we won't lose sight of Jo in this process. As you say, she has a new role as a consultant to the organization now going forward, and we'll probably hear about that as it unfolds next year too.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Rob, for coming on the program, and happy holidays to you and, of course, to all the staff. And we'll have more as we get towards the end of the year here. I think we've got two more podcasts left, haven't we, Rob?
Great. Two more.
Yeah.
Before, wonderful.
Well, before the end of the year, we will keep going after that, hopefully.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, thanks again, Rob.
Okay. Thank you, Chris.
And now, in our continuing series on the USEF Under 25 Winter Training List riders, our next guest is Savannah Fulton. Hi, Savannah. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
So you're already down in Ocala, then, Savannah, enjoying the beautiful weather and the training. Do you spend just the winter down here?
I do. Yep. I ride with Buck Davidson, and we actually moved down quite early because he hates the cold. So we moved down right after Fair Hill, and then we're here until right before Kentucky, usually.
All right. So obviously in the right place then for being on the training list, not far from the training camp there down in Ocala. So let's talk about Jack, the horse that you've been named to that list with. How did that partnership with him start?
Well, he's an incredible horse, and he was actually at Buck to be sold. And he competed him, he took him to Bromont Two-Star, and he was really successful there with him. And for whatever reason, no one bought him. And so he was like, you know what, I think this would be a great horse for you. And so we got a bunch of friends together, and they're really supportive and really helpful. And we put a syndicate together to buy him. And so I started riding him. I took him to the Virginia One Star last fall, which was our very first show together. And I got completely taken away with, but he was awesome on cross country. Just completely out of control, but such a great horse. And so we came back to Florida and kind of regrouped and did some proper training and haven't looked back since.
Now, he's a thoroughbred, isn't he?
He is, correct.
So how old is he, and what kind of temperament does he have for the job now?
He's 12 years old, and, you know, he's a really good guy, and he's really cute and very charismatic. He hates to be groomed. And dressage is definitely both our weakest phases. I'm not quite as confident as I am in the jumping, and he just likes to get a little tense. But when he came to Buck did an awesome job and really spent a lot of time kind of retraining him and getting to settle down. And so now it's just a matter of getting the whole thing together. You know, we did our first season at Advance, and that was kind of like, all right, we're just going to get through it. And now this year, I hope we can spend Florida sort of really practicing our dressage work and getting both of us calm and confident in the dressaging.
Now, what did you do with him this year in total then, Savannah? What were the events that you went to and maybe your best performances altogether?
Well, actually, funny enough, I did the Ocala One Star with him because I had to get qualified on him. So I did the Ocala One Star, and then I did Bromont Two Star, and he was awesome there. And then I moved up to Advanced at Horseback of New Jersey, and we did that, Millbrook, and then we did Richland CIC Three Star, Plantation CIC Three Star, and Fairhill CCI. So it was kind of a whirlwind of a fall season, but he was so perfect. It wasn't even funny. He's just an incredible cross-country horse. And he's really good at sort of just saying, nope, this is it, kid, and this is what we're doing.
All right, so he's a great schoolmaster for you.
Yeah, he really is. And it's fun because, I mean, he's never gone Advanced either, but he just gives you such a confident feeling. I just feel like we're both so comfortable together. We may not know what we're doing at all, but we're good at faking it, you know what I mean?
So Buck helps you then with your schooling and your training generally. And how much dressage do you do with this horse every day? If that's his weak point, is that something you're really focusing on now before you go on to the training camp?
Yeah, this is my fourth year with Buck, and he's just been incredible for my riding and for just helping me grow as a person and a rider. And Captain, he actually just came back from his vacation since he had such a hard year last year. So we're just trotting right now and doing a little bit of spot work in the coming weeks. And he's one of those horses that's tough because as much as you want to drill the spot work, he is a thoroughbred and his favorite thing to do is run and jump. So you kind of have to balance. We found that if you pound dressage 7 days a week, he's not happy, I'm not happy. And that makes the dressage for no good. So we do a good job of balancing flat with, you know, work with play.
Keeping him interested and disguising the dressage, is that the key?
Exactly. We do a lot of flat work before jumping and before he's allowed to go cross country, has to, you know, put his head down and trot around nice and relaxed.
So let's look at the program ahead then over the winter and what your expectations would be from the winter training to start your spring season then, Savannah.
Well, I hope he will do the second show of the year, which will be Rocking Horse, and get out and get going and just stay relaxed and have a nice sort of confidence building winter and hopefully sort of really work on the dressage and really get that good and work on the show jumping and really get that good and just keep him relaxed, ride cross country because he is a thoroughbred and he does like to go. And hopefully just sort of, like last year was sort of, you know, a big move up for both of us, and hopefully this year we can, instead of just getting around, we can start to be competitive.
And then in the long term, do you have the big picture goals for him, or are you taking one season at a time?
sort of one season at a time. You know, he's a great horse, and I want to make sure that we keep doing the right thing for him. And anything from this point on, I mean, anything extra I do with him is just phenomenal.
It's just a bonus, right? And
yeah, absolutely.
I'm
not sure any of us could have anticipated that he would have been this good for me or my riding.
Right, and you have another horse, too. You have a mare.
I do, yep. I have a younger mare, and who I've been competing for about a year, and she's owned by my father. And she's done a couple prelims, and I took her to her first one star at in Kentucky just a couple months ago. And she was great there. She's another one, another thoroughbred type, not super on the flat, but she's got a great work ethic, and I think we're finally starting to click, and she's getting a little bit more trained, so I'm excited to see what's this year.
So you've got something to bring along for the future. So what does the future look like for Savannah Fulton then? I mean, do you have big goals to make it all the way to the top?
Absolutely, I'd love to. But, you know, I also want to keep realistic, and it's a very hard sport, and I don't think it's wise to get ahead of myself. But I'm in a great program here at Bucks. He keeps us working hard and riding a lot of horses, and we get a great view of what the whole picture is. You know, we get to see the business side, we get to see the riding side, we get to go to awesome shows. So, of course, I'd love to go all the way, but I've said it before, but the better I get and the more educated I am, I realize how far away I am and from where all of us are from being, you know, the best in the world.
It is a big mountain to climb, and I know you have mentors, obviously, in Buck, but who else did you regard as your sporting heroes now in this country and maybe in the rest of the world? Any other riders that you admire?
Buck's dad, Bruce, is just pretty incredible. Obviously, I think he's such a phenomenal rider, and even still, he's so good. Whenever we get the opportunity to go over to his Chesterland farm and watch what he does with the babies and just how he brings them along, and we all have a lot of fun watching his old tapes from the World Games and from the Olympics, and it's of course just such a different sport, but Bruce is just such a good eye, and he's a great coach, and whenever Buck's unavailable, Bruce is right there to help us, and so it's fun, you know, we get to be a part of the Davidson family. They're both just so great.
Wonderful. All right, so on a day-to-day basis, you're probably working very long hours and riding how many horses? Because do you have both of yours there? Do you have Jack and your mare there with you in Ocala?
Yep, I have both horses, and they're here. And in addition, we're lucky enough to ride. We've got about 50 horses on the property now. So split up between us, it's quite a few to ride, which is awesome. Packs makes perfect. And I'm lucky enough, I'm starting getting to the stage where Buck's letting me ride some of his own horses and his horses in training, which is so great because obviously it's an expensive sport. So it's so nice to be able to ride a couple more horses at the shows and really get that experience.
Yes, all valuable experience. So what does it mean to you to be on the winter training list when you got that call and heard that you were being named for the list? It must have been a very special moment for you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's awesome and it's a huge honor. And it's nice, you know, it's always nice to feel like your hard work is being appreciated or recognized. But really, it just makes you work that much harder because just because you're on the list doesn't mean, you know, you're anybody special. Like, that just means that you're being recognized and then you're being asked to perform. You know what I mean? So I think it's important to keep in mind that this is just the beginning. And, you know, because you made the list or you didn't make the list doesn't mean you're necessarily good or bad or anything like that. It's just kind of right place, right time. And it just, if anything, being named to the list makes you motivated to make them want to put you on it again.
Absolutely. The inspiration is right there. Well, the very best of
Absolutely.
Luck, Savannah, with Jack and with the mayor, of course, and your future. Hopefully all the way to the top.
Thank you very much.
And our final segment this week is a continuation of our series on buying and starting the young event horse. Debbie Adams from Area 2 is a rider, coach, judge, trainer, and she joins us now. So we've worked them on the flat, Debbie, and now it's time to start them over fences.
Yes, it is. probably one of the most exciting steps for most people. So when I start the young horses jumping, I can't stress how important it is that you reward their effort by riding well. So when I'm riding the young horses, it's still the same equipment that I had on them originally. With the snaffle bridle, I prefer double jointed, as I've said before, because it lies so comfortably across their tongue. I still have them in the jump saddle, but I do my entire workout with my stirrups a little bit shorter. And I, of course, have boots on all four legs because I don't know what they're going to do that first time, and I don't want them to knock themselves. Now, the reason I stress short stirrups, even though we're doing very small jumps, I feel strongly that when the horse makes an effort, the rider needs to be with the horse. So the horse gets rewarded with a easy job of carrying someone. I don't want them to feel you catching up or getting ahead, just following. So my warm-up starts the same. Before I get ready to jump, I'm in my short stirrups, walk, trot, and canter. I've got to get the muscles warm. I've got to get the mind settled. I've got to get the gait adjustable. I do not try to adjust the gait per se in jumping, but I do have to regulate the horse so I have some control, because they're going to get a little quick, a little slow. So they have to be responsive so I can teach them to come in a rhythm. So I do my normal warm-up, and then I start over single poles. And I will just literally walk over that single pole, and I pick a material that does not roll. So I will not use a round pole because it's too easy for them to hit it and get it going, and you don't want them to step on it and scare themselves, twist an ankle, make things crooked. So if I have regular 4x4 rails that I can throw down that haven't been shaved, so they're square so they don't move, that's great. I don't own many of those. Most of my show jump rails are the 10-foot rails that have been the 4x4s with the edges shaved off, so they're truly multi-sided rails. And they're pretty steady. If I think the horse needs me to keep them still even more than that, I'll put them in those little plastic blocks or Cavaletti holders. So I'll do a single pole at the walk just so I know they're going to look where they're going. I'll do the single pole at the trot. Once we've done it at the trot both ways, then we start to put a series of rails down. I usually use 3 to 5 rails. It might be just an old horseman's tale, but I was always told to use an odd number of rails so that the horses don't jump them. But I don't really know if that's true, because I did have one young horse jump all 5 rails one day. And we're going to set these rails roughly 4 to 4.5 feet apart so that when they trot through them, they place 1 foot between each rail. Now, you've got to have a really good ground person at this point in case your horse is naturally short-strided or long-strided, because you really want to work in their natural step. I mean, yes, it's a 2-beat rhythm. It's the normal trot rhythm. But some babies will have quite a big step or a short step, and you want to not try to alter greatly, not at this point. So normally I do trotting through 5 rails on the ground about 4.5 feet apart. Then I'll put a 9-foot space for my first X, and that's quite low. I use an X so the sides will be higher to help hold them straight. So we've trotted over the rails. We have 9 foot over our X. That's our first jump. Maybe 1.5 feet in the middle to start. I don't want it to be too small, because then they're not going to get the idea of leaving the ground. When they're comfortable with this, which some horses may take 2 different sessions, or some horses it can literally take less than 10 minutes. Then my next distance is 18 feet. So I've got my ground rails, 9 foot to my X, 18 feet to my second X. I always start with an X because it helps to hold the horses straight and they're familiar with it. Once they're good at the second X, I quickly switch it to a vertical, because I find they jump in better form when it's a vertical. They have a lot more respect for it. I put a ground line under it to help them judge the height. And the ground line's rolled out, oh, I don't know, maybe 6 to 10 inches, just to give the fence a bit of a shape. If I'm on the whiz kid, I might even set a third fence at about 22 feet later than that. But everything's introduced gradually. I bring the horses once off a left turn, next time off a right turn. I give them frequent walk breaks so they have time to think about it. When I pick the trot back up and start another exercise, I always start with what we finished with. I don't change it until they're back in the groove again. So you've got to have a terrific ground person to adjust the height for you, adjust the distance. If your horse jumps in and 18 feet doesn't work, you may have to open it up. Very rarely do I ever have to shorten it. But I want them to land, be in a rhythm, be comfortable jumping. As I stressed early on, I try very hard to stay out of their way so that they're rewarded with a good ride, so that all they think about is the jumping and how much fun it is. So that usually takes me 1 to 2 outings to get them started jumping. And that's how I begin it, Chris.
Well, that's a very easy start. Give them the confidence they need. That's what it's all about, isn't it, Deb?
Yes, yes. Wonderful. And I don't normally do them with another horse, but you could. I like them really focusing on the rails.
And knowing that it's their responsibility.
Exactly.
Wonderful. All right. Well, thank you very much for that, Debbie. I think we've got one more left, haven't we? Because we're going to go cross country, at least introduce them next time to cross country.
Right. We will take them out in cross country next week.
All right. Even more fun here in this series of starting that young event horse. Now is the time to do it, of course, at this end of the season. So thanks very much again for coming on the program, Debbie.
Thank you very much for having me.
And next week on the program, we'll be concluding this series on starting the young event horse. And we'll also be profiling another young rider. So until next week, don't forget you can get all the latest news on the website at useventing.com and regular updates on our social media pages on Facebook and Twitter. Until the next time, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world, and enjoy your eventing.